We do have a quorum. I don't see Linda Cirio, however.
Yeah, she's the only one that's not here.
Okay. Just came on, Bill.
We just came on. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
I can't hear anyone, so I'm going to go and exit and come back in.
Okay, Ray. Okay. We'll give you a minute. Let's go ahead and get started. Ruben.
Ruben Brown.
Yeah, we have Ruben Brown.
Yeah, Russ White and Andy Anderson.
Andy Anderson are here. Would you welcome, guys? Would you like to go ahead and start on your recap of your audit, please?
Sure, Terry. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm Russell White with Ruben Brown, engagement partner on the job, and I've got Andy Anderson, who's the audit manager on the job. Good morning, everyone. Hopefully, everybody had a nice weekend. It kind of warmed up a little bit, but wind was still kind of a problem. But we're going to talk about the association audit first, and I don't know if you have that in front of you or not. I've got the board packet up, but kind of starting off with the December 31st, 2021 audit, got it in a draft form. Just kind of going over some of the highlights and some of the major changes from last year. One of the first things is that County Standards Board updated the audit opinion. They decided to move the opinion from the last paragraph up to the first paragraph this year. So if you're looking at the independent auditor's report, you look at the second paragraph, you'll see that it's there. Still a clean opinion that we're planning on issuing upon board approval, but second paragraph is the opinion is actually in the second paragraph, and then the basis for opinion is right after that. So they expanded the auditor's report from basically two pages to three. And again, it's important to know that the audit report does talk about the basis for opinion, management's responsibilities for the financial statements, and then what the auditing standards board did is they basically have a whole full page of what's the auditor's responsibilities. So don't want to bore you, but there's a whole page on that, which is like on page two of the audit opinion. And then when we go down to the other matters, we have required supplemental information for homeowners associations, which talks about the future major repairs and replacements. And that's in the back of the audit report. And then the last paragraph in here is report on summarized comparative information. We don't present the full 2020 financial statement in here. We just present comparative financial information. If we presented both the 2021 and 2020, you wouldn't be able to fit on one page. So basically we present the summarized comparative information for basically comparative purposes. And I know there's some questions out there regarding, why don't we present the full comparative? Well, we probably have another sheet of paper out to the right. And from a presentation standpoint, in the past, nobody there at Heather Gardens would want to see a duplicate of the 2020 full audit report presented alongside the 2021 audit report. That may be a little bit inconvenient, but this is how we're presented it. And this is kind of standard procedure that, again, AICPA and the Accounting Standards Auditing Board has this issue. So that paragraph right there is important from a comparative standpoint. Moving on to page four of the Heather Gardens Association audit report, we present the balance sheet here. Overall, there's almost $17 million of total assets. And of that, $14 million of that is cash and CDs. And that amount is up about $1.4 million from 2020. Overall, total assets is up about $1.2 million from $15.7 million to $16.9 million. One of the things I want to bring to your attention is the insurance fund. We're presenting these financial statements, one, operating fund, two, capital reserve, and three, insurance fund. Again, that's standard presentation when you have multiple funds. And the insurance fund's kind of a unique one, but that's accounting for all the insurance-related reimbursements that goes on at Heather Gardens. And $662,000 of that relates to insurance reimbursements. And we've got a receivable up there for $589,000, and we've got a prepaid item for $73,000 that relates to some invoices that were presented late from a contractor last year. As you can see, we've accrued for those payables of $662,000, and those are presented for 2021, and those should be paid, and this insurance fund should eventually go away in 2023. Overall, total liabilities of $7.6 million, $7 million compared to $7.6 million in 2020. Overall, fund balance is up. It's $9.9 million from $8.1 million. So a very strong financial position for the association. Moving on to page 5 of the financial statement. We're presenting revenues and expenses. And as you can see, we've got it in the fund format also. Things I like to bring to your attention again are insurance proceeds that have been accrued, $589,000, and expenses for $589,000 in the insurance fund. Other thing I'd like to bring to your attention is the PPP loan forgiveness of debt of $1,058,000. The association applied for this 2 years ago. And last year at this time, or a little bit after this time, the SBA provided loan forgiveness on this debt. So the correct presentation on this is a extinguishment of debt from the SBA of $1,058,000. And that's where that is presented on the income statement, or statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in fund balance. Last thing here on the revenue side I'd like to talk about is the gain on the sale of the units that were held for sale. We had a small gain of about $74,000 there. Overall, when you look at this, total revenues are up just about $1.3 million from 2020. Looking down on the expense side of the equation, actually expenses are down about $377,000. So last year in 2020, $13.4 million, and this year, a little roughly over $13 million. Overall, when you net this out, revenues less expenses, we've got a net profit or a net excess revenues over expenses of about $1.8 million. And out of that $1.8 million, $1 million of that was from the PPP loan forgiveness. Overall, fund balance, $9.9 million. Moving on to page 6, statement of cash flows. This is one of my favorite statements. Basically, it's a depiction of the inflows and outflows of the association's cash accounts. Overall, net cash provided by operating activities was roughly $396,000. Cash flows from investing activities was a positive $865,000. And then cash provided by financing activities was $200,000. Overall increase in cash, $1.4 million. Moving on to the footnotes of the financial statements. Footnote 1 basically provides the overview of Heather Gardens Association. Footnote 2 basically required footnote, date of management review. County standards require us to put this in here, and basically, as of like today, all of our inquiries are dated today. So anything after today, we would not report on. So this footnote's real important. It basically says that if something happened last week or or on Saturday or Sunday, we would have to know about it to include it in the scope of our audit this year, if it's material or not. But that's what footnote two basically tries to do. Footnote three talks about the summary of significant accounting policies. Real important one there on page nine is member assessments and how we true that up regarding excesses and deficiencies from 2021 going into from 2019 going into 2021. Page 10 again talks about some accounting policies. And I'm going to bring your attention down to page 13. Again, Paycheck Protection Program. Again, the association applied to obtain those funds of about $1,058,000. And they applied for forgiveness, and that was recorded as loan forgiveness. Moving on to footnote four, recap of cash and cash equivalents. Footnote five, investments, talks about the cost and the unrealized gains on the holding, the fair value of those investments. Page 14, we talk about the district on footnote six. Footnote seven, impound deposits. Footnote eight, capital reserve fund. That's probably one of your most important footnotes in the association. And probably where most buyers of property in the association should look at, because it basically depicts the what I call the financial health, the monies that are set aside for future major repairs or replacements. This basically gives you a inflow and outflow of the monies coming in and being dispersed. Footnote number 11 on page 18 is updated regarding the current insurance claims. And this is some of the information I talked about before that was in the balance sheet and in the income statement regarding the amounts that have been accrued for the receivables and the expenses and the monies that are being reimbursed in 2022. And lastly, on page 19, the future major repairs and replacements, the detail on this regarding if everything was destroyed today, what the estimated cost would be from a reserve study, and then how much of that the association has in cash to start that that replacement process. Any questions on the association's financial statements?
Russ. This goes back to page five. Let me get it in front of me here just a second. Under the expenses, repair and maintenance of personnel, repair and maintenance other.
I'm not hearing anybody right now. Bill, is that Bill? Yeah, I don't
am
hear
I
you,
muted?
Bill. No, I can hear you, Bill.
Okay. On page five, under the expenses, the repairs and maintenance, personnel, repairs and maintenance, others. In the monthly reports we get, there was...
I don't hear Bill at all.
Andy, do you hear Bill?
I can hear him. Are you able to hear me, Russ?
Okay. The monthly reports we get indicate there was about $58,000 of maintenance salary.
I'm going to leave and get back in.
And about $12,000 of billable supplies charged back to residents. It appears that this is covered as a reduction in expense rather than income, and I'm curious as to why.
Yeah. Bill, can you kind of restate that question really quick?
Okay.
So you're on page five, and you're
page five, and the line items are the repair and maintenance of personnel and the repair and maintenance other. And but when we look at our monthly statements that we get, there was about $58,000 of salaries expense charged back to residents for work done, and about $12,000 of supplies billed back to residents. That looks like it's been considered as a reduction in expense here on the financial, on the audit report. I wonder why it was not considered as income.
So that's how it's typically been presented. I think just historically going back, it is kind of an offset of those costs that are being incurred there. And I think that's just the history on how that's been presented.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I just wonder if it's been presented properly, because to me it is billable income. It as billable as probably taxable, and on the tax report, is that considered income rather than a reduction in expense? Or to say it another way, is it properly a reduction of expense?
Well, you know, when we bill out, Bill, to the residents, we really bill out the cost. We charge $50 an hour, and that pretty much covers our cost of labor and fringe and associated costs. It's not a material amount. I mean, if you take a look at when you're looking at, you said 58,000, 12,000, and then you're talking about
70,000.
Yeah, you're talking about half of 1% of our total expense. It's not a material amount. And since what we're billing the residents pretty closely tied to the actual cost, we don't make profit on like the cost of materials. We charge them exactly what we get charged. And the $50 an hour, covers, most of the labor cost that's associated there. And especially when you take into cost factors such as workers' comp insurance on that, which is typically falls as a separate line item. I think it's kind of an immaterial amount to be reflected as revenue.
But then on the tax report, is it considered revenue?
It wouldn't be, and Andy, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it wouldn't be considered revenue since it is a cost that stays within the body of providing services for an HOA where we have to pay income taxes, those things that go outside of the services that we provide, such as the Comcast revenue, the laundry revenue, that type of thing.
Well, we don't have to provide those services. If it was a plumbing issue, a resident could call in XYZ plumbing company and they would bill and pay it.
Yeah.
So it's not services we have to or required by declaration to provide.
But we would not need the employee then that is used to provide those services.
That's right. And it wouldn't show up as a reduction of expense or income.
Well, if we didn't hire the employee to do it, it would show as a reduction of expense.
Yeah,
we had to have less wages.
Yeah, I was just questioning that, and I'm not sure that it's been handled properly, but what do I know?
Well, it's a good question.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, I can hear you again. Can you restate the question again? I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. I was looking at on page 5, the expenses for the maintenance section, and there was like 58. On our monthly statements we get, there was about $58,000 of staff time and about $12,000 worth of supplies billed to residents for work the residents ordered done that would be not normally required. And I was asking why it was considered a reduction in expense rather than income.
Okay. On page 5.
Yeah. And basically what Andy and I had indicated was that this has been kind of the standard that's been applied over the past several years on that. I look at the costs that we charge the residents is pretty much kind of break even. We don't charge a high hourly rate. The material costs pass through as what it actually costs us. So the material cost is located in there. It's just we allocate a bill to the resident when they incur it. And so it's, you know, total expense, we're looking at less than 0.5% of our total expenses, and indicated that it wasn't material.
And I followed up with that on Russ's, on the income tax filing, is it considered income?
No, it's not, because it deals with member services. So,
not required member services.
That's correct. But if it deals with member services, we're filing a 1120H. Therefore, that called that reimbursement is not taxable. Okay.
Thank you. That's all I had on that.
Okay. This is Ray. I apologize for not being on. My machine wasn't working, I guess. So I restarted it and it got on. Did you go over any questions that I may have had, Jerry, that you felt needed to come to the attention?
Yeah, Russ actually covered some things that you had pointed out. For example, you know, why we're not providing providing an opinion on 2 years, and Russ did explain that. And Russ, do you want to just kind of go over that?
Yeah, really, yeah, Jerry, sure thing. Yeah, Ray, I think this is a question that we've had probably every year for the last, you know, several years.
I've probably asked it every year.
Well, you did ask it every year. That's exactly right. But that's okay. It's a good question. And you know, we have a paragraph in the last. On page 3 of the audit report that talks about report on summarized comparative information. And basically, if we elected to present 2020 with 2021, the print on those financial statements would be very small. And we want to make sure the reader has the ability to understand and not have to use a microscope to look at those numbers, because we'd have another like 4 or 5 columns out to the right. And so kind of like I've told you and John Coyle probably in the past, is that just look at last year's full audit report to get the full comparison. We're just using that 2020 as a summary comparison so that you get an idea of where the flow of the assets are going, the liabilities and the fund balance, and then also on the revenues and expenses. So we talk about it in our audit opinion on page 3. Then we also talk about it in the footnotes where that's why we're presenting it that way.
There was another item that I thought was at least of some where we can, I'm looking at page 15. It says the value of the lease, this is the lease between the district and the association, is not considered significant to the association according to it's not recorded in the financial statements. It's the item about us getting the HGA getting use of the space and not paying any rent for it.
So, Ray,
I think there's an analysis that could be made of the value there, and I don't know whether it's immaterial or not. I've never seen it.
So, Ray, are you jumping onto the Metro District page 15? Because we're on the association.
I'm on the association page 15, second paragraph.
Same paragraph.
All right. So I think we're, Bill, you might want to help me with this one. I believe where this one comes about, because we talked about this probably 5 or 6 years ago, is that when?
Yes.
The both boards were, I will say, less collaborative than they are right now. There was like I call it an IGA, intergovernment agreement, that spelled out what the use of the clubhouse and the office space would be. And that's where this at no cost disclosure comes from. And at one time there was, but I believe that both boards talked about it, and they deemed it was not material or to present from a financial statement disclosure standpoint. Bill, you have any other information?
Why do we need to say anything about it other than that we use that space and don't pay for it?
Well, the reason we have to disclose it, it's a related party.
Okay, I understand that.
The other thing was that it was kind of, boards agreed that there was an offset for the services the association supplies to the district in accounting, budgeting, et cetera, et cetera. The concept was that they're maybe not exactly offset, but they do offset.
I just wondered if there was an analysis anywhere that proved our point.
No, not that I've ever seen.
Okay, well, I guess we'd say it if we believe it.
That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Ray, also, you had asked that we should eliminate note number two, which talks about the data management's review. And this is a required verbiage that needs to be in from the accounting, the audit accounting standard board there.
Is that right?
Yeah, that one's been out there for about 10 years.
Yeah, and it's really important too. I think that, I know you indicated to me yesterday, Ray, that people that understand audit know that we look at events and transactions up to the date of the audit, but there are a lot of readers of the audited financial statements that are not experienced with audits. And so this is a good message for those that management takes us really seriously, that we keep an eye on any events or transactions that occur prior to the date of the audit that may affect the prior year audited financials. So this is an important information to those readers.
Yeah. Thank you for putting up with my non-verbal communication from my computer this morning. Mm-hmm.
I do, before we leave here, and I know that I want to leave it open still for questions, but I do want to make sure that everybody understands the treatment of what we're doing with the PPP loan as far as letting that be reflected in the operating fund balance rather than flowing through as our true-up calculation.
Yeah, I understand that, but I do have concerns about how it's being handled. That is the forgiveness of the loan. I read something the other day that basically said the Small Business Administration has forgiven more than $190 billion in PPP loans for recipients who demonstrated that the funding was used to retain employees. Did we do that?
Hello.
Well, the I'm looking at the document that for the what they call the form 35808EZ, which is the PPP loan forgiveness application through the SBA. And it and we met this qualification. The borrower did not reduce annual salary or hourly wages of any employee by more than 25% during the covered period compared to the most recent full quarter before the covered period, and the borrower was unable to operate during the covered period at the same level of business activity as before February 15th, 2020, due to compliance with the requirements established or guidance issued between March 1st, 2020 and December 31st, 2020. By the Secretary of Health and Human Resources, the Director of the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, related to the maintenance of standards of situation, social distancing, and other work or customer safety requirement related to COVID-19. Both those requirements.
Okay. My question, though, is did we need the loan to retain the employees? I think the answer is no, we did not.
I guess my question, Bill, is that this was approved by the board back in 2020. I'm not sure why we're needing to rehash this part. The question here with regard to the audit is how we present the PPP loan proceeds, the forgiveness proceeds. I don't think we can go back and try to rehash it. I'm not sure what purpose it serves.
Jerry, if SBA were to come in and audit and they would say, prove in retrospect that you needed that loan to retain employees? Could we
To retain employees or to maintain the payroll?
No, retain employees. Now, the
thing that is because if people resign and replace people.
No, the reason I'm saying that, Richard, is that in 2020, the association budgeted $10.2 million of revenue. At the end of the year, they collected $10.2 million of revenue. So if they, and that excludes the PPP loan. So the money was not needed to pay the people.
Here, here. Yeah, that was my concern too, is that I thought the concept was to help those who couldn't keep their place running without it.
Bill, I'm going to chime in on this because I was part of that with Calvin and gosh, I forgot who was before them, but maybe it was John. But during that time, there was basically about a 6-week period 2 years ago where you could apply for these proceeds. And during that time, there was a lot of uncertainty. So basically, Heather Gardens, like a lot of other businesses, they applied based on the best information they had at the time. And going through this PPP loan application process, there's a written narrative that our firm, you know, helped coordinate that if SBA ever came back and audited Heather Gardens, there's a whole narrative on this of why they deserve the money back in April of 2020 to prove it out. Like a lot of businesses that we have, some of our clients, looking, back into the future, some of them probably didn't need it, but they kept it for other reasons, if that makes sense. But if the SBA, you know, back in April, May of 2020, when the decision was made to basically ask for the money, there's a narrative out there that basically says they needed it because they didn't know how many employees they would have to keep on and how much PPP protection that they needed. So it's an extraordinary item 2 years ago, but that's why I'll say Calvin and John and Brent asked for our help to basically, they wanted to go along that. And then there was a board decision to go along with that also 2 years ago. So, I mean, you'd have to go back to the board members and ask them, you know, what was decision-making to get it? Because right now you're right. It looks like you probably didn't need it, but you've got it.
Yeah, and my concern, Russ, is that, you know, I think the SBA come back for 6 years and audit this, probably 6 years after the time of forgiveness. Well, if they were to come back and audit, they would say, you know, you guys did not need this money. We want it back.
They can do that. I know everyone over $2 million. Everyone over $2 million that got money, they are being audited. But that's where if they ever did come back, we've got the application and the proof that why they applied for it and why they did need it at that time in 2020. And, you know,
that's foresight at that time.
Yeah.
With hindsight, you know, it would be, if we had to justify today getting that loan, could we do so?
I don't believe we could.
I don't think we could either.
I believe maybe it comes down to an issue of, in hindsight, with all things laid on the table, we probably should have not taken that loan, but we did, and they forgave it. So now there's probably a question of whether we ought to pay taxes on it. And present it in such a way that it is, anyway, I don't want to do something sneaky. It's just my personal opinion that it probably would have been a wise thing to forego that.
Yeah,
I agree with Bill.
Yeah, and I guess my bottom line is, are we handling this in an ethical manner?
Yes, based on the rules of the SBA, absolutely.
Yeah,
Based on the compliance of the rules of the SBA, under their guidance, yes.
I would say again in retrospect, no, we did not handle it properly. But that's retrospect. And, as I say, this is an HGA matter. I don't have a vote on it, but if I did, I would vote no.
And then Ray, to talk about the tax on the SBA loan forgiveness, it's a non-taxable item.
Okay.
So the IRS specifically carved out the monies that were received to be non-taxable. And with the filing of your tax return for the association, there's a revenue procedure, I think it's 2021-48, that specifically talks about the tax exempt status of the money that you received. And that's being filed with your 2021 tax return.
Russ, could you talk about the tax strategy for not running the PPP loan proceeds through the TRUIP?
Yeah, so basically PPP loan proceeds are considered non-member revenue sources. And if the IRS had not done this special revenue procedure, it would be taxable. And then under section 6.4 of your declarant document, I think it's on page 13, basically it states any overages or shortages of actual expenses and assessments made will be applied to the following common expenses. So basically the PPP loan forgiveness, debt forgiveness, is not member assessments. So basically you by definition of section 6.4 of the declarant document, you cannot run that through your TRUIP provision. So the thinking on that is that you've got a positive operating fund balance, a large one kind of for the first time. And basically one of the strategies that you can employ is that you leave the PPP loan money as it stands right now, and then you deal with the loan forgiveness income or the cash that you receive, and you use that through your 2023 budgeting process.
But the board would have to approve moving that from the operating fund to be applied against the 2023 budget, correct?
Wouldn't it be simply a source of financing for the 2023 budget?
Yeah, I think it would be. It's already there.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be rebudgeted as a revenue item.
Right. Basically, you've got $1 million that you can't run through the true-up process, but you can deal with it separately in the 2023 budgeting process. So some of our other clients, they've used some of these, I'll just say this windfall for capital items or to keep dues the same or maybe a 5% reduction. One of the things that you can't, one of the reasons that you can't refund this money back to the residents of the association is that would trigger a taxable event to the members.
And that's why I don't think you could justify it in the terms of reducing the assessment for the succeeding year for the same thing, because that's effectively giving it back to the residents.
If there's a narrative around that where you can justify that, that's what
there could be a narrative for foregoing an increase that we might otherwise do.
Correct, Ray. That's correct.
The downside of that is, of course, the potential is next year homeowner fees would reduce and the following year go back up, and people are going to be upset about going back up. They'll love the going down, not going back up.
Right. So from maybe a strategy standpoint, kind of blend that in this windfall in over a 1 or 2 year basis, if that makes sense.
And could it be spread out over more than 1 year?
Yeah.
Well, that's probably not an audit issue that we can deal with immediately. Let's move along.
Well, one final concern that I would have is if we do end up reducing homeowners' fees in a couple of future years, then SBA comes back, is the homeowner going to have to pony up that money again in the future?
Well, that's a possibility. And I'm just telling you what some other larger homeowner associations have done from a risk management standpoint. They've kept it flat. One's reduced their operating assessments by 5%. They can justify it based on, how they're budgeting. But, this group right here is going to have to, justify, how they want to use it in the 2023 budget on a go-forward basis.
To interject, there's a comment from Linda Heilman asking, can the PPP funds go into capital reserves?
My feeling is it can't, because the nature of the SBA monies was basically to help retain 60% was supposed to be used for payroll, and the other 40% was for utilities. Capital reserve funds, capital in nature, fixed assets, future major repairs and replacements, that could trigger a taxable event if you decide to put that in the capital reserve fund.
And you've got your hand up.
Well, we better be careful about that then.
That's why I think the best course of action is to take a look at the 2023 budget and use it fiduciary responsible over the next couple of years. Blend that, that gift from the government, use that those excess monies from a member standpoint over the next couple of years.
Okay, is that my turn?
Yes, go ahead.
I've been chatting all over the place here. My little fingers are flying. I really looked into this PPP money, and the issue of whether HOAs were even allowed to have it was debatable, but we got it. And if it was supposed to be for payroll and utilities, how could Heather Gardens present that it was needed when we had the money? And in order for it to be forgiven, they had to show that they spent it for those things. So that means that we have zero balance technically to spend it elsewhere. And I just feel that, I'm just curious how Heather Gardens pulled this off, but I think that we are in a very precarious position, and the SBA has a lot of time to come back and say hi. That's my point. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think SBA is going to come back. Government's so damn.
Never underestimate the government.
I know exactly. That's correct.
Well, I want this board and the committee members to understand that, when we filled out the forgiveness application, we met the requirements. We had to demonstrate that we had payroll that exceeded $1,058,000 payroll and benefits. In fact, we submitted that during that period, that 8-week period, which I think was extended to almost 24 weeks, that look back period. We had to demonstrate that we had spent that money, that amount in salaries, and we spent over $2 million. We met everything according to the forgiveness application. There was no misrepresentation. We showed the numbers. It was supported by 941 quarterly tax documents that was provided by our PEO. We provided the actual cash disbursement that we paid to the PEO, which demonstrated we paid the salaries. We were able to demonstrate that we didn't reduce anybody's salary by 25%. We followed the rules according to the SBA loan, and those rules did not incorporate in any moral or ethical questions regarding this loan. It was strictly a detailed information that was payroll information that was provided. I even submitted it to Reuben Brown as well to make sure that we were complying with the terms of the forgiveness application, and they reviewed it. So we've had many eyes looking at this.
Yeah, but did anyone mention that although we needed that money and we had salaries and benefits and all this to pay, we also had a revenue from HOA fees to cover the same cost?
Yes.
Did
yes.
anyone mention that? That's an offset that I think was excluded.
Well, it wasn't in the forgiveness application process. And as you know, I wasn't here at the time back in early 2020 when the board members and the Budget and Finance Committee reviewed all the application information and signed off on the loan application with KeyBank. So you guys, I think, would know a little bit more about it than myself.
Jerry, I'm not sure that ever went through Budget and Finance, Jerry.
I don't recall
Budget and Finance considering it.
Yeah.
And I guess Candace's points, I agree with all of them. We did have another revenue source to pay for it, but if the application didn't call for it, then I guess it didn't call for it, but I'm a little surprised.
One more thing there, Jerry. Was any of that salaries that was reported for staff of the golf course or the restaurant or at the clubhouse?
Yes.
You know, HGMD reimbursed that to HGA 100%. So now we're also asking the government to reimburse that?
Well, again, when we presented the information, the salaries and wages are actually paid through the PEO, which includes all the salaries and wages of the golf course, clubhouse, and restaurant.
But they were paid, HGA got full reimbursement from HGMD. So we're claiming it twice.
So we move on. Larry, Davila, anyway, you have a comment?
It seems we have spent a tremendous amount of time on this issue. I don't think that the people that are raising objection are going to be pleased with the responses that have been given, and vice versa. I believe it's time to move on. It's almost 1 hour into the meeting, and we have just dealt with this. Unless there is something brand new, I don't want to hear, I particularly don't want to hear, oh, but I said, and the other party said, yeah, but you, and so on. Unless there is something new, I suggest that we move on.
I agree. Good suggestion.
Okay. Is there a motion needed to recommend the acceptance and approval of the audit?
Who wants to read that?
Or do we want to do them both at the same time?
Yeah, let's do them both.
Well, they go to different boards, so I would say separately. I can read it. I can read it for the association, but I can't make the motion.
You go ahead and read it, Bill, and I'll make the motion.
Okay. Recommend the acceptance and approval of the 2021 Heather Gardens Association audit. Project cost is zero. I move that the Joint Budget and Finance Committee recommend that the Heather Gardens Association Board of Directors accept and approve the 2021 audit pending completion of the open items listed on the lead page of the December 31, 2021 financial statements.
Second.
So move.
Who seconded it?
I second it.
Thanks, Linda.
Okay, so all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
In favor.
Aye.
Okay, it passes. Okay. Let's go on to the Metro District report.
Russ or Andy, it's in your court.
Yeah, I'm going to have Andy present the Metro District report, and Andy's on deck.
All right. Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it. So in your board packet, you'll also have the Metro District financials as well. And looking on page one on the independent auditor's report, Russ kind of touched base on this with the association that, you know, given some changes in auditing standards this year. The auditor's report looks slightly different this year, with the opinion being front and center, right on the top of page one. And there'll be a clean, unmodified opinion on the Metro District financial statements as well. And then you'll also just see some other wording on there, you know, relating to, you know, the responsibilities of management, the responsibilities of auditors as we go through the audit process. Also talks about some of the required supplementary information for the Metro District and other budget to actual schedules on there, as well as some of that comparative information, which Russ also talked about on the association as well. Moving on to the next few pages, starting on page five, is the management discussion and analysis. This is a required piece of the financial statements and really just a high-level summary on the whole set of financial statements. And that's prepared by Jerry. And then getting on to page nine is your statement of net position, very much like a balance sheet. And looking at your current assets, those are up about 180,000 this year. 87,000 of that is cash. Looking at your non-current assets, those are down about 434,000. And that's primarily due to depreciation expense. Looking at your current liabilities, those are down about 115,000. A big piece of that is the due to the association. That went down significantly this year. That's being, you know, reconciled on a monthly basis and transferred out each month now. And then your bonds payable went down significantly as well, with your regular recurring payments on that. And then net position went up about 135,000 this year, which is, we'll see on page 10 on the following page. So looking at the statement of revenues, expenses, changes in net position, you'll see a lot of 2020 was obviously very driven by COVID and closures and, you know, the restaurant being closed, you know, the clubhouse. So with 2021, with a lot of those activities picking up, you'll see, you know, the increase in the operating revenues there. You'll also see a little bit of pickup on expenses as well. Yeah, and ultimately this ends up with a net increase of 135,000 this year, compared to a net decrease of 141,000. Looking to page 11 is the statement of cash flows. And this just adds further detail on that overall 87,000 increase in cash during the year. You'll see about 331 net cash provided by operating activities. There was a little bit of cash provided by the non-capital financing activities. And then just other items of net cash used in capital activities of 258,000. So there was, you know, acquisition of property and equipment, the payments of long-term debt. And then going to page 13, that's going to be the statement of net position on the Heather Gardens Foundation. They're broken out as a separate fund there. And really not too many changes there. Page 14 talks about the additions. You know, there was some donations during the year, and then a few minimal expenses during the year as well. And then the following pages, 15, starting on 15, are your notes to the financial statements, and a lot of them are very standard and recurring footnotes.
I'm just kind of scrolling through that. We'll talk about cash position. It'll also roll forward your capital assets, details out what purchases were made, where, you know, the depreciation expense. Talks about your long-term debt, the $270,000 payment made during the year. And then ultimately, you'll get to your budget to actual schedules. Starting on page 27 is the budget to actual schedule. Overall, looks like, budget-wise, you know, revenues came in a little under budget, but your expenses also came in under budget. And that's one of the biggest items that the state will look at, is whether you're over or under budget on expenses. And so, that's good, showing that you're under budget on your expenses. And that's really the biggest pieces of the Metro District financial statements. For us, is there anything you wanted to highlight there?
No, I think you did a good job.
Okay. Are there any questions related to the Metro District financial statements?
I gave a few questions to Jerry earlier.
Yeah, go ahead.
Say that again, Ray. I missed it.
I gave some questions to Jerry, and I think he answered pretty much. And I think we're okay.
If there are no questions, could I entertain a motion to recommend the board accept and approve the audit?
I don't. Where is that motion?
I can read it.
Okay.
And Ray, maybe you can make the motion. The motion is to recommend the acceptance and approval of the 2021 Thither Garth Metropolitan District audit. Project cost is zero. I move that the Joint Budget and Finance Committee recommend that the Thither Garth Metropolitan District Board of Directors accept and approve the 2021 audit pending completion of the open items listed on the lead page of the December 31, 2021 financial statements. Ray, I'll assume you made that recommendation.
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
I'll second.
Thanks, Greg. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstaining? Thank you. Unanimous. Thank you.
Can I just add that I appreciate this, especially Jerry and his staff, and how quickly they've got this done this year, and the auditors in accommodating the earlier schedule. It just seems odd to be dealing with an audit report about 6 months after the fact, and this is a great improvement. Thank you.
Jerry deserves a big hand on that one.
Yes, he does.
Yeah,
absolutely. Ray, that's a great observation. And, Jerry gave us information in, end of January, first part of February. So we moved up the audit report date from July, August of last year, the last couple of years, and into April, kind of back on the new normal, Ray. And, plus we didn't have any management comments, Ray, or control deficiencies that we've had in the past. And, anytime that you can get the controller, CFO of an organization to have less than 5 journal entries per entity. Anytime you get less than that, 5, you've got a winner there. So I want to make sure that this board understands that you've got a great man there in Jerry Counts. Please don't lose him. He's wonderful to work with, and he definitely makes our life a lot easier. So
we're not going to let him retire. We're not going to let him ever retire either.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry. Everyone.
Yeah, well, thank you guys. Thanks, everybody. And I do appreciate the support that Ruben Brown helped me through, through this first year. Also, really appreciate the input of Bill and Terry and Ray and all the budget and finance people. You guys have been a real big help on helping me get my feet under me on this. So thanks.
Welcome. Well deserved.
Was there anything else on your viewpoints that you needed to talk about?
you know, at a high level, Ray, there really isn't, you know, there's no disagreements with management. You know, we didn't have any problems. So, you know, bottom line, Ray, for your purposes, no control deficiencies like we've had in the past.
Very good.
Thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Russ. Thanks, Andy.
All right. Anything else? If not, Andy and I are going to Zoom off.
Okay. Go have a
coffee. See you next year.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
Thank you. Okay. Super. Okay. Let's move on with our agenda items. Any changes or additions to the Budget and Finance Committee report of March 14th? There is one correction that David Kennedy mentioned as far as it shows that November financials were reviewed or something to that effect. It should have been February, so that's been corrected. Other than that, any other corrections or changes to that report? Hearing none, let's move on. Monthly operating analysis report. Jerry, you're on.
All righty. I'm going to try to really kind of speed through this, but please stop me if you need some more clarification. So I'm going to start with the Heather Gardens Association budget exception report. Our year to date, there, as you can see, where our total revenues at 2.7 million, 13,000 compared to budget of 2,710. Most of that is over budget, mainly as a result of our miscellaneous income area. Our expenses year to date, we're at 2,566 compared to budget of 2,691. So we're below budget on expenses by 125,000, and total for revenue and expenses, we're ahead of budget by 128,000 in the operating area. In our capital reserve area, we, you know, our budgeted reserve income, less expenditures at 701,000 compared to budget of 267. That's we are below budget there by 434, or I'm sorry, we're ahead of budget by 434,000. That will get caught up. We'll start whittling away at that as we get more of these bigger projects starting to incur here in April going forward. Looking down through the more detailed of the executive summary report, for the general expenses, we came in about $13,000 below budget. This is primarily due that we had dropped in the budget process $10,000 for a special election in the month of March. Of course, we didn't have that, so we didn't incur those expenses. Utilities and insurance, when you combine all of those, we were like spot on budget, like a $600 difference was all. For custodial, our net wages and benefits for March were below budget by about $4,000 due to having 7 full-time equivalents versus a budget of 8. Supplies were over budget in March due to purchase of a couple vacuum cleaners. Maintenance, so we had a lot, actually both in roads and grounds and maintenance, we had a lot of activity going on in March. We, for maintenance, the net wages and benefits were $13,000 below budget due to being one FTE, being down one FTE compared to budget, and also larger charge outs to other departments and residents than what we had budgeted for the month of March. We had a total of 13 OPEX line items that exceeded budget in March, totaling $40,000. I've detailed what those were there. But these were offset by a total of 18 OPEX line items in maintenance that were actually below budget by $32,000. Our administration costs continue to be below budget, mainly because of being down 2.5 FTEs. Paint costs came in at about $1.7K above budget, primarily due to supply costs. However, when you look at the year to date, we're actually below budget by almost $5,000. Roads and grounds, we had the full-time salaries were lower because we were we're down two FTEs. However, some of the savings were partially offset by higher overtime wages resulting from the snow events that occurred in March. Our snow removal supplies have exceeded our annual budget. We've had several snow events in the last 3 months that require multiple applications. We do have inventory available for another 2 to 3 storms. Assuming that we don't see any more in the springtime here, we'll have a supply that'll carry us somewhat into the fall and end of year time period. We did have equipment repairs that exceeded budget by $3,000 for a variety of items such as snowplow parts and some maintenance on equipment and purchase of supplies. For security, March costs were nearly break even compared to budget. The $5,000 savings that we're not incurring with the ProVigil cost that was originally budgeted for was partially offset by $1,600 of 3 security cameras in the maintenance building. We did have to replace a radio that failed, and it was replaced with the like model and included a Bluetooth hands-free capability for officers while driving and patrolling. That was about $1,000. And then we had about $500 that was incurred for 7 wearable safety lights. That's it as far as on the operating side. Anybody have any specific questions?
Actually, I do. For custodial being down $4,000 in 1 month because of one less employee, full-time employee. A full-time employee makes $4,000 in a month?
Well, hold on
a
second.
That was custodial.
Yeah. So there are other factors that kind of go into play on that. We do have some PTO adjustments. So when somebody takes PTO, that expense is actually reduced because we've already accrued for it. And I believe we had about $1,500 of PTO expense that also reduced it, which I guess I could have put that in the description, but I didn't. It was I indicated mainly it was the full-time equivalent, but you had some other reductions there that's associated with PTO payments.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What were the 2.5 positions in administration that were missing?
Senior accountant, operations manager, and we hired a new receptionist, but that didn't start until about mid-March or the end of March.
Okay. Which is the senior accountant? Who was that?
Anissa.
Okay.
Are we still there?
Yeah.
Alrighty, moving on, there isn't anything really to highlight on the capital reserves total year to date. We spent $151,298. I am seeing more activity definitely in April on capital reserve expenditures. So that number will go up. Any questions here?
I was just struck that it looks like that we're getting bids to do work that are very inflated from what we thought that we might get or what we hoped we might get. So jockeying the work around a little bit.
Yeah. Moving on there, really the following statements, unless anybody has any questions on the investment or the Raymond James accounts, these are reports that pretty much are the same except for activity, some minor activity changes each month. The balance sheet, the one thing point out on the balance sheet is on the accounts receivable side, we continue to see a reduction there in collection of past due amounts. If you look on the balance sheet side, the accounts receivable and assessment receivable is at $156,921. This includes the receivables of the 6 HOA fees, but also includes other items, mainly billable work orders to the resident. Last month it was $216,000. This month we're at $156,921. Other than that, there wasn't anything.
We cannot take this call.
Other than that, there wasn't anything really I wanted to point out on the balance sheet. Did anybody have any questions on that?
No.
All righty. Of course, in the report there follows the MOAs by the individual departments. I won't cover anything there unless anybody has any specific questions. All right, let's move on to the Metro District. We'll start with the budget exception report here. Our total revenue, the top line there, we're at $730,799. Year to date, our budget was $770,000, so total revenue is about $40,000 down. We did make up some ground on our cost of goods sold, which is good. So total gross profits at $698,000 compared to $727,000 budget, still below budget by $29,000. However, we did make up ground, big ground in the operating expenses. We came in at $535,000 versus $605,000, so savings of $71,000 there. So overall, we're about $42,000 ahead of budget on the net operating income. As far as capital improvements, we spent $54,288 versus budget of $68,000. So we're ahead of budget there by about $14,000. Clubhouse. Year to date, the subsidies at $149,000, which is better than what we budgeted for of $165,000. So we're to the good there of $16,000. Golf year to date, we're at $103,000 subsidy. That too is better than what we had budgeted for at about $136,000. So we're to the good there, about $33,000. And the restaurant's making up ground. They actually did better in the month of March than what we budgeted for. But still, year to date, their subsidy is $41,000, which is still higher than what we budgeted at $32,000. But that's whittling down. I do want to point out that looking at the activity in April for golf and for restaurant, right now, if they maintain their daily sales activity, that they've done in the last week, we should exceed budget for as far as revenue for both those entities. So that's good news there. I'm glad to see golf now being able to get more opened up there. And the restaurant activity has just been, to me, one of the best activities that I've seen since I've been here. And I know I haven't been here that long, but it still was good news to see that. We didn't have much activity. Well, before I go there, did anybody have any questions on the budget exception report? Capital reserve, really the main expenditure that we had was had to deal with the fuel tank. We got the fuel tank in place at the beginning of March. And so that's been a good thing to have and good for the, a lot more efficient for the roads and grounds and security and golf crews. Any questions there? The foundation donation summary report, we didn't receive any donations in the month. We did have an expenditure of almost $487 for TV and the lobby flyer for the lobby flyer display. Really nothing to speak of on the summary of investments. The one thing I do want to point out, in more detail is in the clubhouse, financial statements. We did have, if you look at the clubhouse P&L, we had considerable maintenance hours that's been incurred mainly because of the work that's being done in the pool area, installation of that that access chair. But the one thing that we missed on the budget, it was the roads and grounds hours. What you're seeing there, that 4,288 actual, and our budget was zero. I just didn't get that picked up on the budget. We didn't have any activity for me to look at in 2021 when we were budgeting this. We've implemented processes that we make sure that costs are being allocated correctly. And so Matt kept track of the hours. This was for seven guys for 35 hours a week for placing the mulch around the clubhouse area, and also in the OPEX area. The supplies there also included costs for 70 yards of the of that mulch. So anyway, this just for the 2023 budget, this is certainly on my radar, make sure that we've got something allocated in the budget for this. But even with those costs, we're still ahead of the budget, ahead of the game there. And really with the labor being transferred over, it reduced the labor costs on the maintenance side of things, or on the roads and ground side of things. So consolidated between the two entities, it's a net zero, but it is a cost to the Metro District for that.
Jerry, I thought in past years the golf crew did that. Has that policy been changed to the roads and grounds crew now?
I can't speak to what's happened in the past. To me, it made sense that the roads and grounds crew was handling. I know the golf folks have been short-staffed as well, so they may have not been able to participate in that.
Should be.
I did not have anything else, even on the balance sheet. The activity on the balance sheet, there wasn't any major swings in anything there for me to point out. Other than that, is there any questions on the Metro District's information?
Oh, I attended the Clubhouse Restaurant Committee meeting the other day, and Randall and Cormac did a very good job of explaining. They spent quite a bit of time on the P&Ls and they answered every question really well.
Okay, good.
This is almost getting boring, Jerry. You're
Well, I want to try to keep this within half hour. I know Larry would love it.
Well, let's go forward. Half hour is almost up.
All righty. I have nothing else. If anybody else have any questions, I'll be glad to answer. If not, Jerry, I'll leave it in your hands.
Okay, thanks so much, Chair. Okay, subcommittee reports, audit subcommittee. Craig, do you have anything to add?
No, you have my report.
Do you have enough people?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Good. As far as insurance subcommittee, Randy, update?
Yeah, we had a meeting on March 18th. I gave each member a copy of all the HEA insurance policies. We have a new member that's joined the subcommittee that has extensive insurance experience, which is good. And now we're going to meet April 22nd to review and discuss all the HGA insurance policies.
Capital program subcommittee, anything to add, Ray? Anything?
No.
Okay. Investments. I've got Nick Pacucci coming in today at 2:00 to get stuff signed for those annuities that we're going to be doing. So just a reminder to Jill and to Larry, please be here at my building. Other than that, there's no unfinished business. Let's move on to emergency expenditure, purchase 100-gallon hot water tank for building 216. That's a FYI. That affects Larry, myself, and Randy. So anyway, because we live in that building. But anyway, any questions regarding that? $34,530. Okay. I'm going to guardedly recommend looking at increasing spending, discretionary spending limit for our CEO. Anyone have any questions or comments?
Terry, I had sent you kind of a follow-up.
Yes.
Hadn't heard back. Did you get a chance to discuss that with John Ray?
Yeah, I sure did.
And John. What, you know, I asked for some examples of why this was needed. And you know, like something in the last 6 months has happened.
So one example that just came up here right before spring is our inventory control group had to split a sprinkler and supply order that was over $10,000 into two increments so that they could get that through so that we could order bulk purchase of supplies. So we're kind of seeing that a little bit more and more. But that's what we've seen most recently, and I would imagine that we'll probably see it more so down the road as we look at trying to do our procurement process and really focusing in on more bulk orders so that we could get price breaks and things of that nature.
The other thing I wondered, seeing this as a policy and it impacts the district, should this be referred also to the district board?
No, it's in the motion, Bill.
Oh, was it?
It's in the new motion.
I missed that.
Now, I wanted to point out that last month we looked at $25,000 spending authority. I've lowered that to 20, trying to just make it a little more palatable.
How long has it been at whatever? Is it at 10 now?
It's at 10. Yeah, it's been
there. How long has it been there?
Oh, forever and a day.
Yeah, it's been there for a long time.
Okay.
Craig, do you have in your audit subcommittee a listing of the spending authorities of the various managers?
Yeah, that'll have to be revised.
I might. At one time, it was part of the budget and finance procedure manual. I don't see it in there now. I wonder if that should be put back into the budget procedure manual.
Oh, I suppose it could. It probably is a procedure that's done by management. I don't.
It would need to be re-looked at every year.
Yeah.
When you look at the B1 says operating expenditures over $10,000. All requests for operating expenditures over $10,000 must be initiated using the request for operational expenditure attachment 2. Purchase required, 3 written bids, all that other fun stuff.
What Bill was referring to is that every employee, every staff member has a certain budget.
And spending authority.
Amount. Yeah. That would have to be looked at also.
Would you want to bring back that to the next budget and finance meeting, Craig?
Yeah, I'll have to figure out who's been doing that and how we could come up with an answer.
Well, at this point, we're just dealing with one.
Right.
And then, so let's deal with that and then determine if we need to roll back with the other one.
Yeah. I don't know how it's been handled in the past.
Someone want to read that motion for me?
I will. I move that the Heather Gardens Association Board of Directors and the Heather Gardens Metropolitan District Board of Directors approve the request to increase the CEO's discretionary spending authority for operating expenditures from $10,000 to $20,000 to maintain proper and timely workflow.
I'll second that.
Okay, ready, second. Any questions? Any comments from the community? I don't see any, okay. All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Okay, opposed. Thank you very much. That's passed. Now we go on to recommend chair rail project for building 214, 19, and 243. Who wants to read the first one, please? The 214.
I'll read it. Based upon the recommendation of the Maintenance Committee, I move that the Budget and Finance Committee recommends that the Heather Gardens Association Board of Directors approve the chair rail project for Building 214. The project costs $24,161 with a change order amount of $1,657 for a total cost of $25,818. The budget amount is $25,818.
Any questions, comments?
About a second.
I'll second.
Yeah, thanks, Harry.
Okay, Harry. Okay. Any questions, comments from anyone?
I just noticed in the bid comparison that the reason they are using the $24,000 figure is that that's what it cost last year. And I under the assumption that if things go as they did last year, that we wouldn't be, may not be using all of the $1,600 in change order.
Okay, all in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It passes. Okay, let's do it for building 219. Same motion.
I'll read it.
Thanks, Harry.
Based on the recommendation of the Maintenance Committee, I move that the Budget and Finance Committee recommend that the Heather Gardens Association Board of Directors approve the chair rail project for building 219. The project cost is $24,161 with a change order amount of $1,657 for a total cost of $25,818. The budget amount is $25,818.
Second. Okay, Craig, thank you. All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Okay, that passes. Okay, the last motion is for building 243, same dollar amount, everything. Who wants to read this one?
I'll read it. Based on the recommendation of the Maintenance Committee, I move that the Budget and Finance Committee recommends that the Heather Gardens Association Board of Directors approved the chair rail project for building 243. The project cost $24,161 with a change order amount of $1,657 for a total cost of $25,818. The budgeted amount is $25,818.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That passes. Okay. Members of the audience wishing to speak on non-agenda items, is there anyone that would like to speak on any non-agenda items? Hearing none or seeing none, I move for entertain a motion to adjourn.
Harry, really quick, remind me of the building, your building number for 2 o'clock.
216.
216. Thank you. I'll be there.
Okay, good. Thanks. Okay. Hearing no objections, we are adjourned. Thank you so much, guys.
I'll get the notes to you this afternoon, Terry.
Thanks so much, Bill. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you.